This is the Ripple Effect with your girl K-Dot, where we're discussing NBA and NFL and everything in between.
Hey, what's going on? It's your girl K-Dot back in the Ripple Effect. You already know what it is, and you already know the vibes. What's going on? Shout out to all the supporters. I hope y'all listen, liking, and subscribing. If you're not, please do. It's been an amazing journey, amazing ride. I know this sounds like a farewell thing, end of the season. Nope, I don't do those. There's going to be times where I'm going to put up posts a couple times a week, and there's going to be times where maybe there'll be at least once a week, but I'm always going to holler back at you guys no matter what's going on, because if you know anything about the NBA, even though it is over, Golden State Warriors are having their parade, rightfully so, it don't matter. The draft is coming up. You know, the off season sometimes is more lit than the regular season, right? I can't really speak for the playoffs because the playoffs have been kind of crazy, but you get where I'm going. There's always something going on. NFL, don't forget, we talk about NFL too. You know, there's a little things going on, but not enough going on for me to really speak on. I'm not really about hot takes. I kind of just wait until, you know, things actually happen and then kind of speak off, you know, what I know from that. But you already know. But this episode, I thought we'd do something a little bit different. I've been telling you guys for the last couple months that I've been deep into all the books that I came out, and I've done my best to keep up with, and I just finished Carmelo Anthony's book, man. If you guys have not read that book just yet, read it. It's titled Where Tomorrows Aren't Promised. It's a memoir of survival and hope. That's what he calls it. It's beautifully written. It's a pretty easy read if you're really into not just basketball in a sense, but the trials and tribulations that come with it, right? Understanding generational poverty and what it looks like to build generational wealth, and how obviously this is like an anomaly situation where you just don't, that's not things that you see every day. Now there's things in the book that he goes into detail about his upbringing. It's remarkable that he is the man that he is today, the father that he is to his son. It's amazing. I say that because the things that he went through, and I'll go into a little bit of detail because that's pretty much what this episode is going to be about, because I've always been a fan of Carmelo Anthony. I remember when he came out in 2003. I also remember him shouldn't have won Rookie of the Year, but he had some pretty tough competition with LeBron and, you know, NBA's agenda to try to save the NBA. So I get it. Personality and different things and agendas definitely come into effect. Carmelo Anthony led his team to the playoffs that year. Remarkable year. I don't think he's ever gotten as much credit as I feel he should have gotten. But I say all that to say this. He grew up in Red Hook, Brooklyn, if you guys didn't know. When he was, I believe it was before he was 6 or 7, he moved to Baltimore. Man, I knew Brooklyn was rough, but reading all his detailed accounts for what he went through in, he calls it B-more, but Baltimore, it's no joke. It's what you hear in the news. Young kids getting shot, right? The drugs sweeping through the neighborhoods. You know, like candies in corner stores. It's crazy. Understanding the dynamic in which he grew up in. Not having his father in his life because he died when he was very young, so he didn't really have much of a memory of his father. He did have a chain that his father left him, which was the only thing that he had that his father passed down to him. And you'll hear, you'll read if you do choose to read it, and I do implore you do, but he goes into detail about how one of his really close friends, you know, on the block. Best friend even. You know, he trusted him and he learned a really hard lesson at that time because people are poor in the neighborhood, right? They don't get to see chains and different things like that. So when they do, some people take that opportunity upon themselves, no matter if it's friend or foe, you know, to take it, take what's yours. But his friend asked him if he could just wear it, you know, to know what it feels like to have jewelry on. Because to come from one bedroom, you have 6 to 7 people in one apartment, you know, not the best area in terms of drug activity, criminal activity, just the environment in which it's just not conducive to living or conducive to a successful living, you know. But he does this, and he loans that chain because he understands what it's like, you know, to be poor and to really want something, but maybe only gets to just wear it or embrace it or kind of just feel empowered in that moment. So he did give him that chain, but just to wear, not to have, you know. But his friend never showed up again once he gave him the chain just to, you know, wear it for like a day or whatever the case was. Never came back with the chain. Obviously, his mother was furious because that was literally the only thing she, you know, his father had given to her to give to him once he becomes a certain age. And now that's gone, because once that something like that's gone, it's priceless. You know, you can't get that back. And in that environment, this is typical to want to go get that chain back. You know, I'm sure whomever's listening to this podcast comes from all different walks of life. But when somebody takes your chain in the hood, that's like snatching your soul. Like, that's everything. That's all you have, you know, besides your word, right? Your code, whatever you live by. But that's like the biggest disrespect ever. That's like somebody spitting in your face. So, and his mother understood that, you know. So she was like, "Who took your chain? Oh, you know who took it, and you're not, and you don't have it." So meaning she grabbed him up, took him to wherever that kid likes to hang out, and she was like, "You got to fight him." I know. I know a lot of people right now, especially in this era, this generation, are probably like, "What?" You know, some people are thinking like, wow, like ACS, oh man, that's child endangerment, all this. Listen, this is how it was. Like, this is, I can't even say this how it was. This is how it still is in some places. Like, now, I didn't grow up like that, so I can't say that, you know, I can 100% say, like, you know, I was in that situation. But I was definitely around it at one point, so I understand it. But you feel for somebody who's in that situation because you have no choice. You gotta fight. You know, this is your mom. Like, your mom is bringing you over there. Like, think about that. You gotta do what you gotta do. I mean, the way that story ends is it's not a fairy tale story. He doesn't just, you know, beat up the guy, save the neighborhood and wins his chain back and everything is all good. Nah, it didn't happen. Like, he definitely fought, but he didn't get his chain back. You know, the kid was just swearing that he didn't have it, and it was just a really messed up situation, because as a kid, he's talking about in the book, like, how all these different emotions are kind of overwhelming him at the time, because this isn't just a chain that he snatched. And I told you the significance of somebody snatching your chain in the hood, right? Well, that was a chain that his father gave him, someone that he really didn't have a memory of besides of what people told him in his family, not to mention understanding that you can't get that back. Like, sort of remembering, I can't get my father back. I can't get my chain back. You know, sort of feeling like all is lost when it comes to that front. And it was a really interesting dynamic how he chose that story, because I'm sure he had a lot of stories, but like I said, that chain story is really significant, and that definitely resonates with a lot of people who grew up under those circumstances. But I say all that to say this, because he did have a stepfather in the home. His name was Deke. And he always felt that he was treated differently from his other brothers and sisters because that wasn't, you know, his biological father. And he always felt it was because, and this is what he writes about, and it's not like my analysis, this is what he had said, that he always felt like maybe he treated him like that because when he looked at him, he saw another man's child. Now, that was like, whoa. And remember, he's saying, like, this was pretty young, you know. You're talking about maybe middle school age, you know, early on, even elementary in some cases. And he talks about how basketball was definitely his escape from his house when his mom used to work 2 and 3 jobs. And I know some people would say, like, wow, like, how could she have a man up in the house and him not even respect or like your own, you know, your own son? And this is how difficult that is, right? Carmelo talks about how he kind of kept a lot of this stuff to himself. He talks about loyalty. He talks about it's everything to him. And even under the most messed up circumstances that he reveals, it never wavered his loyalty. He was loyal to his family, his sister, and his brothers and his cousins. He was very much loyal. That was everything. And he even talks about even coaches that, you know, in AAU teams that he played on and how it didn't work out and how he ended up playing against them. And even though he crushed them, he still went back because he still felt that loyalty. It's like he needed to prove that point. But at the end of the day, you know, loyalty always brought him back. And he was really good about that, like the way he details every circumstance. But yeah, just going back to the stepfather and how he felt and having brothers that were pretty much, you know, in the system, in and out, and how much he really looked up to them because they were that male figure for him, you know, them giving him game, meaning telling him about life, trying to teach him maybe even all the ways that they went wrong. And they didn't say it to him that way, at least in the book, but you kind of got that feel that they really wanted him to do things the right way, because they were basketball players too. They had all the potential in the world. One of them really well known in the neighborhoods of New York City, and how he really wanted them to do so well. And I know when you hear Carmelo Anthony, especially when you think about Syracuse and him taking them all the way to a NCAA, you know, championship, and for their first time. And that's what you hear. And you hear about, you know, play of the year. You hear about him getting drafted to the NBA. But the reality is, like, he was pretty consistent throughout the book. Like, you can tell he was on a journey to finding himself. And basketball is something that came, obviously, with a lot of hard work, but it was somewhat natural. He was just really good. And I don't think he understood just how good he was. You know, he's a pretty humble guy. Like, even now when you see him in interviews and, you know, different things of that nature, or even when he was at the pinnacle of his career, very soft-spoken, you know, just a genuine guy. He never really seemed bigger than the moment, even though at times he really was that dude. But there was definitely a humbleness to him, you know, a very embracing side to him. And you can tell just by reading the book, you definitely can get that sense that, wow, this guy really wasn't aware of how great he was. You know, that was like the biggest takeaway for me, because even when, you know, he was getting scouted by colleges, he didn't go to a big name school. And he could have. I know a lot of people say Syracuse, like, okay, maybe he wasn't heavily recruited. No, he was. He was very heavily recruited by all the big name schools that, you know, UCLA, Duke, you know, Kentucky, Kansas, like, but that's not what he wanted. I think he wanted a school where he can find himself, find out what he really likes, what he wants, you know, just to be out of the neighborhood, you know. I'm getting a little ahead, but it just seems to me that some people, when they have a goal in mind for the NBA, and you can tell by their path, like, that's exactly where they were headed, that's what they were trying to, it was very intentional. I don't feel like a lot of what Carmelo Anthony was doing, especially when it pertained to basketball, that it was intentional. I just think he was trying to stay out of trouble. Honestly, I think he just really wanted to be like his brothers, his cousin. I think he really just wanted to find himself. And I think he was just hoping through basketball he would. Because maybe basketball would take him to a place where he would. Because even when he went to Catholic school, and he actually thought that he went there because it was a scholarship, but it was actually his mom had to pay. I don't know exactly, you know, what percentage, but he wasn't even aware of that. You know, that's how his mom was, because his mom worked 2 or 3 jobs. That's why I'm pretty sure she wasn't even aware of really how Carmelo was really feeling about his upbringing, his household environment, and how it affected him mentally. He seemed like a pretty quiet guy that pretty much kept to himself, unless it was his friends in the neighborhood or one of his brothers, you know. And then his brothers were kind of just all over the place, and he talks about that. He talks about that in detail, about how they weren't always around when he needed them for different reasons, and he never really said why, you know, very vague about, oh, he just had to do what he had to do, or that was just him, you know, you catch him when you catch him, you know what I mean? Like, and that's just remarkable in itself, because he never harbored any resentment. Like, he understood, even at a young age, like, listen, this is what he had to do. He didn't, you know, talk down on him. He didn't, you know, judge him for having to end up in jail, out of jail, back on the streets, just to end up back being around the wrong crowds, and how it affected everyone. You know, it was really remarkable, because it really is a testament to how loyal he is. He's just that guy. Even in a book where he can really go into detail and say why they weren't around and how that really, you know, affected him. And he never really made it about him. Like, he understand that they had their struggles. And to understand that as a child, I mean, you know what I mean? Like, to have that sort of empathy and and that real non-judgmental mentality, it just speaks to the person that he is, and understanding who he was becoming. You know, who he was becoming was very intentional. He did a really good job in understanding we're in poor circumstances. We don't have a lot of options. We don't have a lot of choices. So to judge somebody under those circumstances is, you know, what's the point? You know, and usually someone who would judge them under those circumstances probably never been in those circumstances or would know nothing about it. But he would go on. His mom would, you know, pay whatever she could to make sure that he was in these summer programs, to make sure, you know, he was doing well, trying to get the best education he could. And he also talks about how he didn't really fit in. The cornrows, you know, the untucked shirt, you know, in these private schools, they don't understand that. They don't want to hear about, you know, your culture, your struggle. It's just about conforming, right? And you can have your opinions about whether you're for it or against it, or, but at the end of the day, when you feel like all you have is who you are, you know, and you having someone take that away from you, it's rough. And Carmel Anthony never really, and he went to church. His mom took him to church on Sundays. I don't think they really said if it was like every Sunday, but they definitely went, you know, pretty often, enough for him to understand his mother's beliefs and to eventually have his own. And a lot of it conflicted with the private schools that he went to. And naturally, as a youth, you know, you question things just from not understanding, out of curiosity. You know, when kids get a certain age, especially that preteen, you know, the natural rebellion to question everything, to wonder why. And that didn't exactly fly, you know, where he was. And he had a really, really tough time. And he even talks about the book about, he talks in the book about how he understands now as an adult that there was a lot of racial undertones when it came to that. You know, it wasn't just about, like, him questioning things. It was more like them questioning his culture, you know, where he comes from, his beliefs, and why he wore his hair the way he did, and different things like that. And it was just really interesting, because it's true. When you're a child and you have your own experiences and you're thinking like, oh, okay, this teacher or this coach or this person, you know, this adult, we're talking about adults here, and you're the child, and all you can, you know, come up with, you know, because that's just all you have in your toolbox, you know, of knowledge. You're just thinking like, oh, something really simplistic, like, oh, they just must not like me for whatever reason, right? And America is supposed to be this place where, you know, we all come from different backgrounds, different beliefs, different heritage, right? But at the same time, that shouldn't be a reflection as something negative, right? Just because it's not something that you believe in or something that you know much about. But at very least, we're supposed to respect one another. That's the hope, right? That's what we're selling, right? But all the time, you don't see that. So that's why I'm sure it was very therapeutic for Carmel Anthony to write this book, because he's reflecting on his childhood and knowing what he knows now, is able to say, oh, so this experience wasn't just, you know, this adult not liking me, a child. It was more so my culture and how he, as an adult, felt threatened by me, the child, because of where I come from, how I look. And it was very profound, because Carmel Anthony is very resilient. He was always motivated. He never let anything stop him. It just seemed like no matter what he went through, he always had it in him to keep going. Like, it was intrinsic. Like, just that internal motor, no matter what. Excuse me. Even him finding out that his stepdad was getting sick, and he didn't understand why he was getting sick and what was going on. But he was the only one that would be home, really, when he would come home from school. And sometimes he would have to pick him off the ground, help him up, make sure he's good at a young age. And he's thinking, like, okay, maybe he might, you know, have a disease or something, you know, of that nature. And then one day he just happened to find out that his mother and sister were keeping a secret from him. It turned out that his stepfather was on heroin. Like, whoa, like, this is why I was picking him up. You know, this is why I was making sure he was good while everybody else was, you know, doing whatever it is that they had to do. And you can tell when he talks about that, it hurts him. Not because he's on drugs, it's because they didn't feel it was necessary to tell him that, even though he's in the house with him, you know, alone. So he feels somewhat betrayed in that moment, you know. And you know how loyal this guy, you know. He's like, man, I deal with this guy. I help him up. I do all this stuff. And it's like, man, you can't even tell me what he's really about, you know. Like, you can tell, like, that definitely kind of shook him for a minute. But, you know, they had their reasons. They felt like this is coming from his point of view. He talks about how they felt like they were protecting him because he was too young enough to he was too young to know that the man that she chose to be with is on drugs and needs help. Meanwhile, I already told you that Carmelo Anthony is in an environment. He grew up in an environment where somebody on drugs is not exactly something that he doesn't see. Like, he sees that on the regular. Like, that is normal. It just wasn't normal to be inside his house. So that was, like, something that kind of, you know, made him take kind of like, like, Carmelo Anthony, even at a young age, was very, like, observant of his environment. He likes to observe things, so that way he knows how to move, right? But even in that, he was still helpful. He was still involved. I just think once that situation kind of broke out, it was kind of like his mom, his sister, and maybe the people around him kind of realizing, like, oh, Carmelo's growing up, you know, faster than we'll be like, but he already grew up. Like, we thought he was just a little kid, you know, kind of in his own little world, like most kids are. But Carmelo was different because of what they, you know, what he's been surrounded by. Like, he already grew up. And as Carmelo would continue to write about how, no matter how hard things got, no matter even how lonely things got when he didn't have, you know, his friends around, and he talks about Robert C. That was, it was kind of like a YMCA that he used to go to, you know, playing rec ball, playing football, anything he can do to keep himself busy when his brothers weren't around. And he talks about how hard it was even when Deke died, his stepfather, because you're conflicted, right? It's like, okay, the guy who treated me bad, because he always felt like, or at least his impression that he always felt like, because you look like another man's son, but yet you're watching your whole family kind of get torn in pieces because this was a man that they loved and he loved them. And you're watching them go through it. So you feel sad just by default. He talks about his brother getting killed, shot due to gun violence. He talks about his cousin as well. And how he needed to just keep on. And these were all in his teenage years. You know, preteen, teenage years. All before he went to Syracuse. He's finding out all these things. And dealing with all these things, more importantly. Because you can't control what happens. But you can control how you react, right? You can control what do you do next. He chose to keep going. And he chose to remember the positive. He rarely talks about the negative, about how they got caught up. He'll tell you the situation, keep it short and sweet. But at the end of the day, he always thanks them for trying to, you know, teach him about life, trying to give him as much as his game as possible, because at the end of the day, life is difficult. Life is even more so difficult under those circumstances. And he didn't want Carmelo Anthony to not be prepared. You know, nobody in his family did. So they made sure they gave him enough information as possible and even showed him some moves on the court, you know, whenever they got a chance. And Carmelo Anthony just took it and ran with it. And before he knew it, you know, he was a superstar in the making. And it's funny, too, because when he decided to go to Syracuse, he committed to Syracuse pretty early. You know, didn't really wait for any other schools or didn't wait for anybody else or really get too much of anybody else's input. He was going to Syracuse. That was it. And even when he would, you know, visit and go out and do all these different things that an athlete of his caliber would get to do in his position, he stuck with it. He signed with them. I think a lot of people were surprised. Everybody had all these big expectations, and Carmelo Anthony just talks about how he was just trying to learn how to navigate Syracuse because he didn't realize how big it was and how you had to take buses and different things to get around campus. And he talks about being a loner. He talks about not having a car. And you're thinking, man, weren't you like top player of the year, you know, All-American, all this, you know, you were in AAU with LeBron. And he talks about, he just very briefly mentions LeBron and how their friendship became, and that was because of AAU. But it was just funny because a lot of times, you know, the narrative is if you're a highly recruited guy, you're pretty much set in college, right? You're going to have cars. You're going to have the fancy apartment. You're going to have money to do whatever it is that you feel like doing. He talked about being broke. There's one story that really resonates with me, which just speaks to not only just how determined he is, but just how humble, right? Because I'm sure people were trying to give him handouts and do different things, and he wasn't trying to do that. So this one time, he was actually trying to get back to school. And if you know anything about Syracuse or anything about New York and there's snowstorms, and I'm not just talking about the city, because the city can get their fair share of snow too, but I'm talking about north, right? Far north. West, even. They get some storms, man. So anyway, he heard a storm was coming, but like any 18-year-old kid, what do you say? I'll be fine, right? Your mom's telling you, I think you should chill, you know, wait it out, and then you can go back. But he just had gotten a car, you know, a used car, you know, one of those cars that just gets you from A to B. You know how it is. He decided to go. He just said, go for it. He's like, all right, I'm there. Of course, he's hearing, you know, the snowstorm is getting worse. And then they start to shut down the roads because he was still going. He was on the road, ready to go, you know, still doing his thing. And car was fine, but they closed down the roads now. Now he's, you know, in the middle of the road, stuck, not really sure where he is, but now he needs to turn off and just kind of find an inn. Because remember, his car, you know, doesn't have much AC, doesn't have much heat. I'm sure he don't have the gas to last him to sit there all night, you know. So the whole bit, you know, broke, whatever. He finds this inn. And he's just like, wow, let me see if I can, you know, at least stay here. I don't know what he was thinking. He was just like, let me just see. He goes in. He talks to the guy and he's just like, man, like, can I just stay here? Like, you know, most inns, like, there's like a common room and then you have like the rooms going up, elevator and all that. I think he was just asking, like, let me just stay here on the couch. Like, let me just chill and I'll just be out in the morning. And the guy was like, no. And Carmelo Anthony was so upfront with him. And he talks about it, how, listen, I don't have a dollar to my name. I'm just trying to get back to school. I'll be out before the morning. It's just that it's snowing outside and, you know, there's nothing else. There's nowhere for me to go, you know, and roads are shut down. You know, this is, you know, pretty much begging the guy, like, please, like, let me stay here. And the guy is real adamant about how he doesn't have any more rooms left and he can't just have you, you know, staying in the hallway as he described. It's just not a good look with the residents. And he's like, it's just nothing we can do for you. And Carmelo's like, man, like, you know, like, what am I going to do? So he's like, you know what, let me just use your bathroom. The guy was, like, nice enough to let him use the bathroom. Cool. He uses the bathroom. Then he's thinking to himself again, like, I got to try to persuade this dude because there's literally nowhere else for me to go. There's no other place. Like, what am I going to do? So he goes back to the counter. The guy wasn't there, but he sees a magazine. A magazine. Whose face was on the cover? Carmelo Anthony. His face is on the cover of a magazine just lying on his desk. So he's just like, man, I'm going to try it. He's not the type to really, you know, use his fame or anything like that to try to get a hookup. But he was like, you know what? This one moment may just save my life. So the guy comes back and he's telling him, like, listen, I'm sorry, but please, I need a room to stay. Like, look, this is me on the cover. Like, this is me, you know, like, this is me, Carmelo Anthony. And the guy was looking at him and looking at the magazine and he was like, wow, like, that does look like you, you know. And the guy's looking at him like, yeah, but I thought you guys, like, get money from, like, agents and all these, you know, all these things that people think. And he's just like, yeah, well, that ain't me, obviously, you know. And the guy was like, you know what? I have a room, but you have to be quiet. You have to be out by the morning. Otherwise, my manager will, you know, like, he'll flip. Like, you have to really be out by the morning. But, you know, here you go. So sure enough, Carmelo Anthony got that room for the night, and he was out before the morning even broke, and he was out and went back to school. Like, to me, like, that was just, like, like, that's a crazy moment. And it also makes you think, like, he really wasn't that type of dude to take handouts. He really wasn't that type of dude. Like, it took his last resort to use his fame. And I'm talking about he was a big star at this point. You know, heavily recruited. They were already talking about him in the NBA draft. And this is before, you know, he took Syracuse to the championship. You know, it was just stories like that that make you think, like, man, like, this dude is just, he was different, you know. And I know he definitely had his name in the media for all these different types of reasons. But at the end of the day, I'm like, he went through it. And you know what? People make mistakes. He's human. I'm sure writing this book was very therapeutic for him, and I hope it was. And I hope it's eye-opening to a lot of people, you know, that have all these high expectations of people just because of their abilities. Their abilities are just that, their abilities. It doesn't mean that they're devoid of weaknesses, you know? Like, they can't have failures. They can't have mishaps. They can't have just bad things happen, you know? And when those bad things happen, that trauma, right, that builds up, it starts to manifest in all these different things. And money does not cure it all, folks. I know some people like to believe that, and sorry if you do, but it's just not reality. At the very end of the day, he learned, I believe, after writing this book, that he learned to deal with his trauma, right? I don't think there's ever forgetting it. I don't think there's ever any getting over it. I think there is you learning how to carry it, learning how to make it inspirational, learning how to make it so somebody else can say, wow, not only is it okay to be human, it's okay to be accountable, and it's okay to carry it with you and wear it like a badge of armor. Like I said, where tomorrows aren't promised. Kamala Anthony with D. Watkins. You guys should pick it up. This has been your girl, K-Dot. Always remember, one thing, losses equals life lessons. Peace.
This is The Ripple Effect with your girl, K-Dot, where we're discussing NBA and NFL and everything in between.